From Iowa Public Radio News, I'm Ben Kiefer. This is The Exchange. Earlier today, Governor Chet Culver delivered his Condition of the State speech, and this hour, we'll get reaction to it from a variety of perspectives. Ed Failer of Iowans for Tax Relief and John Gilliland of the Iowa Association of Business and Industry will join us in the first half hour. Then later, Board of Regents President David Miles and Chris Byrne, President of the Iowa State Education Association. What do you think of the condition of our state? We'll get started right after this hour's news. This is The Exchange from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. This morning, Iowa Governor Chet Culver delivered his address on the condition of the state to both houses of the Iowa legislature. Iowa Public Radio was able to bring you that live address courtesy of Iowa Public Television. Here's how the governor began the speech.
I'm happy to be with you for this extraordinary 80-day session. There's much to do and no time to waste. We face some real challenges, one we did not create, but ones we will overcome. On the one hand, we continue to recover from the natural disasters, which are historic in their scope, the fourth worst natural disaster in our history. Additionally, the ongoing national recession continues to affect every Iowa family, every Iowa business, and every aspect of our state government. But as Iowans, we continue to address these challenges head on with resilience, optimism, determination, and good old-fashioned hard work.
That was the governor earlier this morning. This hour, we want to get reaction to the governor's speech from a variety of perspectives. Later in the hour, we'll talk with Board of Regents President David Miles and Chris Byrne, President of the Iowa State Education Association. First, joining me now from the Law Library in the state capitol, Ed Failer, Jr. of Iowans for Tax Relief. That's a nonpartisan, nonpolitical organization that works on tax and spending issues. Also, John Gilliland, Senior Vice President, Government Relations for the Iowa Association of Business and Industry. The ABI has over 1,300 business members that employ over 300,000 Iowans. Gentlemen, welcome to our program.
Thank you, Ben.
Thanks for having us.
I want to reach out to our listeners. We'd like to have our listeners join our conversation this hour as well. What did you hear in the governor's speech this morning that you liked? What didn't you hear that you feel should be a priority? 1-866-780-9100. Or The Exchange at iowapublicradio.org. Ed Failer, please, let's start with you. The mission of your organization is to work to limit total government spending and total taxes. What jumped out at you about this speech in terms of the message the governor gave us about taxes and spending?
Well, you know, my mother always taught me to start out by saying something nice first. If you didn't have anything nice to say, say nothing at all. And I think I'm going to have to violate that rule here in a little bit. But I will say, when he talked about the reorganization of government, that's real important. Government needs to be more efficient. And the governor said that we need to look at long-term ways to make government more efficient, not just look for short-term cuts like the 10% across the board cut, which would not have built in any institutional long-term change. So that was a real upside, and it was a good thing, and I hope he's serious about that, and I hope he pursues that.
So you're happy that he outlined government efficiencies to come?
Absolutely. I think it's real important, and I think he does understand it, and I like to hear the verbiage he was using, because it is about long-term savings, because that's how you really handle the problem. You build in institutional savings down the road and efficiencies. Now, the problem is we're building in at the same time institutional inefficiencies and institutional dependencies that are very harmful for taxpayers. It's sort of multifold. I'm not certain how he said with a straight face that he hasn't raised taxes in Iowa. Well, he's signed a bill that raised utility taxes in Iowa. He's signed a bill that increased tax burden on Iowa businesses. And by passing the 10% across the board cut and by passing then that on obligations that the state had to local school districts, it's going to cause about a $250 million property tax increase to Iowans. So that wasn't intellectually honest. Not intellectually honest also to say that this is a budget that is smaller than ones in the past. Well, what they do is they discount the money that they're spending, the federal dollars that come in. Well, the federal dollars don't come off a tree. They come out of the pockets of hardworking Iowans, Iowans being net donors to the federal tax structure. We get back less than what we send away. So these are all Iowa taxpayer dollars in real terms. And we're building then, we're paying for long-term obligations, structured long-term obligations of government, and we're paying for them with one-time federal dollars in a lot of these stimulus areas. And that's real scary because now we have built what is the biggest budget in state history, what is bloated, and what has about a $1 billion hole. And that's the truth. So real was not comfortable with seeing the governor talk about a more responsible budget and budgeting process than has really incurred on his watch.
Ed Failer, what do you have to say about using $100 million from cash reserves to backfill education cuts?
Well, and again, we need to do more responsible things. We're robbing Peter to pay Paul repeatedly. He sort of did threefold things that that were irresponsible and are robbing Peter to pay Paul sort of concepts. One, that $100 million to fill the backfill. Let's use responsible budgeting. Let's not raid the cash reserve funds, which only exist, frankly, based on tricky government budgeting that your business in Algona couldn't get away with doing. Governor also talked about bonding. He talked about how we need to get down that road of bonding, and bonding is a real good plan to go down because Iowa, he said, his logic being that Iowa has a AAA bond rating. Well, that's fantastic and nice to know as well. But two people I'll point out to you that had AAA bond ratings were Enron and Fannie Mae. We see how those worked out. That went real well for them. The AAA bond rating by itself means almost nothing. And then the road use tax fund. He suggests scooping the road use tax fund, which is supposed to be protected for road use, and sending it off to pay for troopers instead of doing a responsible evaluation of the system and understanding how can we deliver services to Iowans without increasing their costs. And when you're going to another fund, you're really increasing their costs in the end because we're institutionally built something that's being paid for where it shouldn't be. So those things were very concerning and should be concerning to taxpayers because this is a house of cards that's just going to fall someday in the future after we just get caught in all the budget games we're playing.
We are going to focus in our second half hour more heavily on education, but your organization, Iowans for Tax Relief, has suggested merging the administrations of the region's universities. How much do you think that could save?
Well, their budget is about $6 billion a year. Interestingly, it's about the same size as the state's online budget as well. We estimated 1%, but I think that's very, very conservative. We have three presidents of three universities. We have three payroll departments. We have three human resource departments. We have three library procurement departments. We have three security departments. You can just go down that line that the 1%, which would save $62 million, is so modestly conservative. I would have to believe you could save 5%. Now you're pushing into $300 million. It's extensive.
What support are you seeing for it?
You know what? It's one, the government reorganization type stuff that we've been pushing, and some of those efficiencies to be found in government. We're getting from both sides of the aisle a lot of interest. And to be completely frank with you, the only other issue that we've been pushing that has received a substantial amount of communication with us, with our organization, and how do we go down that road, is the issue of combining services within the university structure.
So you are seeing support specifically from whom?
We will have bills. We have a press conference on Thursday morning where we'll be talking about who's sponsoring the bills in our package, and we will save the names till that point in time.
Okay, very good. John Gilliland of the Iowa Association of Business and Industry, you're also with us. I want to ask you about the speech, the same question. In terms of business, what jumped out at you about the governor's speech this morning?
Well, I think, Ben, the first thing was important to hear from the governor, and we're hearing this from legislative leaders as they opened the session yesterday and gave their opening day speeches, is that we're talking about, putting Iowans back to work. We currently have 115,000 Iowans who are out of work and through no fault of their own. And so our members, the employers of the state, share that goal, is we need to do everything possible in this legislative session to make that the focus for 2010, that we need to put people back to work. Now, I think where we may start to differ a little bit is when we start talking about long-term private sector jobs and the jobs that are created through, you know, the companies on Main Street that I represent, as opposed to some of the government jobs that are shorter term that the governor has, you know, talked a lot about in his speech today regarding his iJobs program.
Let me get you both to react to this quickly before our break. We have a couple minutes to Ed Failor, please. The governor has recommended that the legislature act on the recommendations of the Tax Credit Review Panel. What do you think of those recommendations, quickly?
Well, tax credits are an acknowledgement that our income tax system is very, very broken, and therefore it's government getting in the business of picking winners and losers. But as long as we have an income tax structure, we need to do those things to make Iowa businesses competitive and allow them tax credits. So I would suggest that if we would eliminate the income tax on Iowa corporations, we would put a big sign on Iowa that says open for business, and John's 130 members or 1,300 members in the state of Iowa would grow to 13,000 members in the state of Iowa, because this place would grow like mad if we got rid of our corporate income tax.
Okay, let's go to John, please, on that same question, the tax credits.
Well, you know, one of the things that the governor mentioned specifically in this speech, he took great pride in the fact that that Iowa has seen over $7 billion of private investment, capital investment in the state. That's been done by Iowa employers, and frankly, it's been leveraged by these tax credits that we're talking about. I think the return on investment on some of these research tax credits, et cetera, there's no program in state government that has that type of return on investment. So I think those are very defendable when you look at it. But again, I think Ed's exactly right. I mean, if we have to have these kinds of programs simply to mask the Iowa's mm-hmm. high tax rates.
Very quickly, don't taxpayers, we're all taxpayers, deserve to know what this money, that it's being used wisely in these tax credit situations?
Absolutely. Absolutely. And our
how do we do that?
You know, we support that the transparency is a buzzword around here, the companies that use these credits have no problem with that. This is, it's, you know, like you see, there's all kinds of you know, news releases is sent out daily by the Iowa Department of Economic Development about different loans and grants and seed money and tax credits that are extended to in efforts to bring private sector jobs to this state. And we need to continue to you know, leverage those opportunities that we have and not do things that are going to turn our business climate the other direction, you know, that's going to discourage that type of private sector job growth in the state.
John Gilliland with us from the Iowa Association of Business and Industry, along with Ed Failor Jr. of Iowans for Tax Relief, reacting to the governor's condition of the state speech from this morning. Perhaps you caught it here on Iowa Public Radio. We'd like you to react as well. We'll come back with Ed Failor Jr. and John Gilliland, and hopefully from you some comments. What did you hear in the governor's speech this morning that you liked? Or what didn't you hear that you feel should be a priority? 1-866-780-9100, our toll-free number, 1-866-780-9100, or email us, theexchange@iowapublicradio.org. We'll be back in just 1 minute. Getting a reaction this hour from the governor's condition of the state speech earlier today, carried on Iowa Public Radio. Joining us, Ed Failor Jr. of Iowans for Tax Relief and John Gilliland of the Iowa Association of Business and Industry. Join us with your comments or questions, 1-866-780-9100 or The Exchange at iowapublicradio.org. To follow up with you, John Gilliland, about the tax credits review panel's question. Are there things in that tax credit review panel's recommendations that would hamper the tax credit program overall and the return of the investment that you were talking about?
Well, you know, generally, I mean, most of the recommendations that came out of the panel, and certainly you know, we testified before the panel, shared a lot of information with them. A number of our members did it well, and I don't think that we feared that kind of review at all. I thought it was timely. So, and most of the recommendations don't see a problem with. I think we may have some discussions further around the issue of refundability. There are some of the research credits that are leveraging tremendous amount of private sector investment in the state that are refundable if the income liability for the taxpayer is not outweigh the credit. They can receive a refund on that tax credit. And so there's a recommendation to limit that or change that. And so that deserves further study. Again, we want to make sure that research is done in Iowa. And if we don't have an attractive program for that research will be done. It'll just simply be done somewhere else. And so that's one of the features of the Iowa program that is most beneficial to creating a lot of very nice, high-paying jobs in Iowa.
John Gilliland and Ed Failor Jr., I'd like to play a little cut from the governor's speech this morning and have you both react to it. This is what Governor Colmer said about growth in Iowa's economy this morning.
We now have the eighth fastest growing economy in the United States. That's right, number eight. We were recently recognized as being the fourth best place in America to do business, up from number nine last year. And Iowa now is number one in the nation in terms of low cost for doing business of all 50 states. There's more. Two weeks ago, according to MarketWatch, Des Moines was named the number one city in America to do business. These aren't just statistics. They are the tools we will need to help us continue to attract good-paying jobs to Iowa and encourage existing companies to expand here.
A rosy picture of Iowa's economy, according to Governor Colmer. John Gilliland, you agree with that?
Well, I think what was really most interesting to me about the governor's speech today is what he didn't say. And I think we'll take some credit for protecting him from himself, actually. In prior years, in the governor's condition of the state address, he's talked about a number of what I will call union bills that would have very, very detrimentally impacted Iowa's business climate and certainly hurt our ability to be, even considered on some of the rankings that he touted today in his speech. So I think that the fact that some of these very damaging negative business climate bills have not passed in the last 3 years that he has been governor, I think is helpful now. But I'm glad that the more discussion and saber rattling we have, frankly, though, doesn't hurt our it hurts our chances moving forward. So I was glad that he didn't talk about those kinds of things in this year's speech.
Ed Failor Jr., anything to add to that?
Well, just very simply that the data he shared was not sourced in any way. You don't know what it's based on. Is it based on government expenditures? Is it based on parks? Is it based on facilities the government provides? Because I can go down the line and tell you from American Legislative Exchange Council, Iowa was one of the worst places to do business because of our tax structure, because of our burdensome regulations, and that because we fortunately don't have haven't violated Iowa's right to work law and dismantled it, which has been a discussion the governor's had, that Iowa could even get worse. So you can toss statistics around either side or the other. What I do know and what is factual is the 10 fastest growing states over the last decade are those without corporate income taxes or personal income taxes, or the very lowest corporate and personal income taxes. And they also have very low burdens of government on the individuals in those states. And sure, it's Florida and it's Texas. They're nice and they're warm, but it's also South Dakota. It's also Wyoming. It's also the state of Washington. I mean, so when you take those burdens off of businesses and businesses coming in and creating jobs, and then what happens for the government is you broaden the taxpayer base and they're paying more in taxes and property taxes because there's more of them living there. They're paying more in sales taxes because there's more of them living there. And people vote with their checkbooks and with their feet, and they move to those states which place less of a government burden on them. So I think it would be interesting to know what they were basing those judgments on, because taxpayer-based judgments don't say Iowa's one of the best places to start a business.
Okay, perhaps we can squeeze in a call or two in the remaining few minutes for Ed Failer Jr. and John Gilliland. Let's go to John in Davenport. Good afternoon, John. Welcome to our program.
Thank you. I was on the Mental Health, Mental Retardation, Development Disability, and Brain Injury Commission for the state of Iowa for 5 years. I have mental illness. I'm a paranoid schizophrenic. Under Governor Vilsack and Sally Peterson, Lieutenant Governor, this was considered important. I haven't seen it as being important recently. I didn't hear anything said about the most vulnerable people in the state by the governor in the speech. And I consider it difficult to understand how a state that is mainly now in these years considering upgrading itself in business can say it's a good state when it's not dealing with taking care of the people who have difficulties.
Okay, John, thank you for that. I don't know if we have a reaction from our guests, Ed Failer Jr. or John Gilliland. Do you have a reaction, or we let that statement stand there? Okay, John, thank you for joining us from Davenport. Before we have to go quickly, we've got a couple minutes left. Let's go to you, Ed Failer Jr. There was nothing in this speech about tax reform. Do you hold up any hope of in this shortened session that that will happen?
Well, I really hope that they don't go down a road of any further increasing the burden on Iowa taxpayers. The governor seemed to criticize what he called armchair quarterbacks. An armchair quarterback to me is the guy who sits in his recliner watching the game and they need to pass more. Well, that's exactly what the governor did with his 10% across the board. It was cut. It was lazy, and it caused a $250 million property tax increase for Iowa taxpayers. I would suggest that he actually be the quarterback of the state, that he evaluates the challenges ahead of us and understands that putting further burdens on the taxpayers of Iowa is not a way to get down the field and score a touchdown for the state of Iowa. The way we need to do it is by defending those who are paying the bills.
Okay, so more targeted cuts. And any advice on the targeted cuts instead of the across-the-board 10% cut?
Yeah, and again, we will be doing something about this Thursday morning, but we provided over $700 million in cuts, which would get them in line, that didn't sacrifice public safety, that didn't raise taxes, and didn't harm education, all of which were harmed during his 10% across-the-board cut. So I'd be happy to sit down with the governor any day and lay out over $700 million in cuts for him so he can get his budget in line without hurting the essential services that Iowa should and do expect.
John Gilliland, just a few seconds left. I want to ask you from your position at the Iowa Association of Business and Industry, what do you think should be the legislative priorities in the coming session?
Again, we've got to put the 115,000 Iowans that are out of work back to work, and that's done through the private sector. Long-term employment opportunities with benefits will come from the private sector if the legislature makes our tax structure more competitive and doesn't mess up our business climate by passing very uncompetitive bills. You know, Ed talked about where growth states are. Well, they're right to work states also. So, ironically, that's they go hand in hand with a less regulation, lower tax burden. Those are where companies are investing resources to grow private sector jobs, and that's exactly what we need for Iowa. And that's not something the legislature can do on their own. They need to stay out of the way.
John Gilliland, thank you very much. Ed Failer Jr., thank you very much for joining us this half hour from the Law Library at the State Capitol. Thank you, gentlemen.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Coming up in just a minute, more reaction to the governor's condition of the state address. In the next half hour, we'll focus on education, being joined by Board of Regents President David Miles and Chris Byrne, president of the Iowa State Education Association. We'd like to have you chime in as well. What did you hear in the governor's speech, or what didn't you hear in the governor's speech that you feel should be a priority? 1-866-780-9100 or email us, theexchange@iowapublicradio.org. We'll be back in just a few minutes. I'm Ben Kiefer, and this hour on The Exchange, reaction to the governor's condition of the state address this morning. And we'd also like you to join our conversation about what you heard in the governor's speech that you liked, what you didn't like or didn't hear that you feel should be a priority. 1-866-780-9100, 1-866-780-9100, or email us, theexchange@iowapublicradio.org. www.mentalhealth.org. This half hour, focusing on education, joining me now, Board of Regents President David Miles and Chris Byrne, President of the Iowa State Education Association. David Miles, Chris Byrne, thank you for joining us.
Thank you.
Thanks very much.
I want to start off by having you react to President Miles to this comment by the governor, the only comment, as far as I could tell, about higher education in the speech this morning.
Additionally, I want us to do all we can to support our community colleges, private colleges, and Regents institutions. We have some of the best in the country, and they've also earned our support. And speaking of the best in the country, wasn't it great for Iowa State and Iowa to win those bowl games this year?
I guess we can agree that it's great to have winning football teams. But David Miles, are you concerned there was almost nothing in the speech besides that about higher education? Any details?
Well, I think it's important that there was something in the speech about higher education, and I know that higher education is very important to this governor. Education flowed through his 10 priorities, and I think they're right on track. Those of us in higher education know that the K through 12 system is also absolutely critical, and so I think the emphasis on making sure that we protect K through 12, as well as the governor said, do everything we can to support all of our higher education institutions in the state as well, is exactly the right kind of priority.
Could you take a moment to outline the funding concerns that you have as president of the Board of Regents at this moment?
You bet. I'd be happy to do that. In terms of state appropriations, we're down $165 million from FY09 through FY2010. Now, that doesn't count $80 million in federal stimulus or ARRA funds that we received, and we don't know exactly where we're going to fit in the governor's budget. But if that money is not replaced with higher state appropriations, it would be a 22% decrease in less than 2 years, which is really unprecedented for the region system and has been something that's been very challenging for us to adjust to.
So what's the answer there? I mean, we've heard students have been complaining that higher education is becoming unaffordable. Some have not returned this semester to the region's universities because of these surcharges.
You know, if any have not returned because of the surcharges, that would be very unfortunate. It's a $100 surcharge. It's not a significant amount of money, although we recognize that for some folks it's a burden. There were three students that I heard the stories told this morning, and that's meaningful. But we have a need-based financial aid available, and so those students that do have demonstrated financial need, it's not $100. It's well less than that. We recognize that the students have had to sacrifice, but we've tried to share that sacrifice. Of $165 million, we've asked the students to contribute $6 million. And so it's meaningful. The $100 makes a difference in individuals' lives, but where it's really a burden, we're happy to step in and provide financial aid to help them.
You mentioned, David Miles, that this year the cuts were not as bad thanks to federal stimulus funds. We won't have those next year. So describe the position that puts universities in, the regions in.
Well, it puts us in a very difficult position. Just one historical reference I would make. When in prior years, if you go back to the early 2000s, when the state has cut appropriations to the Regents system, in order to make up for those cuts, the Regents have had to increase tuitions double-digit levels. That happened in 2002, 3, and 4. And those were decreases in appropriations of 7.5%, 2%, and 5% led to double-digit increases in tuition. This year, we're looking at nearly a 22% decrease in state appropriations. And that in such a short time, in a one-year time period, for us to absorb that is very, very difficult.
Well, how should you go about it? What are your recommendations? What are your thoughts?
Well, I do think that the governor's second priority this morning, which is to continue to find ways to be as efficient as we possibly can be, is definitely in order. It's something that the Regents institutions have worked on for a long time and look forward to working on with all of state government this year. We are going to have to look at other ways to reduce our costs, and we've done a number of things. Our We've had no salary increases except for those that are negotiated with bargaining units. We've established phased retirement programs. We've reduced our employee benefits. We've taken furloughs. And we will probably have additional position eliminations and layoffs. What the challenge for us is that this leads into larger classes, fewer classes being available, fewer electives, and in some ways the students are make a sacrifice in that regard too.
What do you think about the idea, and it was initiated, Ed Failor Jr. of Iowans for Tax Relief was with us in the first half hour, the idea initiated by that organization of saving money, creating efficiencies by merging the administrations of the region's universities.
You know, Mr. Failor and I agree on, I think, one important principle, and that is that we should try to be as cost-effective and efficient as we can. I have to say, in terms of the particulars, though, one really needs to do their homework. If you look at Wisconsin, which is what he cited, Wisconsin has not one president; they have 14. Pardon me, I think it's 15. 14 university presidents and a president of the entire system. So they have 14 universities. We have three. They have a larger administrative overhead than we do. Their tuition is about $8,300 compared to $6,700 in the state of Iowa, and their state appropriation per full-time equivalent student is about $400 higher than ours is. So we should be looking for different approaches, but I think Wisconsin is not the model that we would want to move toward, and I guess I would add just one other thing. When he talks about creating a university system, we have one of the finest university systems in the nation today.
Let me turn to you, Chris Byrne, president of the Iowa State Education Association, before we go to calls. The governor spells out in his address this morning much more specific help for K through 12 than for the region's schools. Get $100 million in cuts restored out of reserve funds, while there was nothing specific there for the regions. A lot more in this speech about K through 12 than higher education. Do you feel, Chris Byrne, that you're competing for attention and funding when it comes to the governor?
Well, I don't know if we're competing. I think the governor, again, made clear that education is one of his priorities. And, you know, the K-12 system has taken some cuts in the past year. And those cuts really have disproportionately hit rural schools. And so the $100 million, even though we haven't seen where that's going to be directed, he did talk about trying to restore some of the cuts to rural schools. And so we're pretty excited about that. We're also very excited about the 2% allowable growth. And he said that he was planning to fully fund the 2% allowable growth. I think it shows that the governor does have education as a priority. I think it also speaks to one of the ways that we're going to get out of this recession is through education, and with the K-12 system and the community colleges and the other higher education institutions. I mean, retraining people is one of the ways that we're going to get out of this recession.
Do you feel like the schools feel like the governor is sort of giving with one hand and then taking away with the other by trying to require them to use the school systems to use their cash reserves to make up for this shortfall in state funding rather than raising local property taxes?
Well, you know, that's a very difficult issue. There are some cash reserves around the state that we believe are larger than they really need to be. And so spending down that money is probably a good thing to try and avoid increased taxes and so forth. There are also some school districts who do not have the cash reserves anymore because they have spent down the cash reserves because of budget cuts and so forth. So, I mean, it's a very difficult issue.
Let's go to our callers before we run out of time. Just over 10 minutes left here on The Exchange. If you'd like to join our conversation, 1-866-780-9100, specifically this half hour about education priorities in the state, 1-866-780-9100. If you've just joined us, our guests, Board of Regents President David Miles and Chris Byrne, President of the Iowa State Education Association. First to Bettendorf, Bob is joining us. Good afternoon, Bob.
Yes, I think that the colleges and universities are getting the short end of the stick on this. The way to bring business into Iowa is to we have good colleges and universities, but let's continue to fund them and increase their funding. That's how you bring business into Iowa, not by tax credits and grants. I have a second comment on K-12. One way to improve the K-12 schools wouldn't even cost any money. Let's improve the subject matter mastery and knowledge of the teachers over education courses. And that's easily done. Just change the requirements for teacher certification.
Okay, Bob, we'll get the reactions to that. First, to President Miles, the short end of the stick, you feel like you're in on it?
Well, I do think that his point of growing the institutions is very well taken. There's a very reasonable sense in Iowa that we should only have as much government as we need and can afford. And this is one of those times when we're going through an economic contraction caused by worldwide financial problems that we ought to really be thinking about that. Higher education, on the other hand, is such an investment for the future. You know, the average median family income for someone with a high school education is about $39,000. For someone with a bachelor's education, it's about $68,000. And we are creating citizens for the future. I would tell you, Iowa's institutions are so strong, and this includes all independent colleges, universities, community colleges, the Regents institutions, that we are now the seventh leading state in the country for the net in-migration of incoming freshmen. So we're drawing students from all over the nation and really the world, and we need to continue to grow those enterprises.
Chris Byrne, can I have you address the second half of that question and perhaps also your comments on the president's Race to the Top initiative and its priorities, how it might compare to No Child Left Behind?
Well, I believe, first of all, that we do have a very rigorous teacher preparation and teacher certification program now. And so I'm not sure that we need to strengthen it any. I think it is already pretty good. We do get good candidates and coming into the teaching force. Our problem is keeping them once we get them. That's one of the problems that we have. With Race to the Top, that is it's an exciting thing because it's looking at trying to transform education. And there's no question, we do a very good job in Iowa of educating our students, but there are always things that we can improve upon.
How does it compare to No Child Left Behind? This Race to the Top initiative is new to us.
First of all, No Child Left Behind was very punitive in its nature and had a strong tendency towards testing students. Race to the Top, we're not going to have those. We're talking about implementing multiple authentic measures of assessment, and that those do not include standardized tests. I mean, they may have, but the dependence on standardized tests is going to go away. It's also going to help us implement the Iowa Core, which is already being done. However, if we can get this grant, it's going to allow us to implement the Iowa Core much faster and with much more fidelity than it is being done now.
A few more minutes with Chris Byrne, president of the Iowa State Education Association, and Board of Regents President David Miles. 1-866-780-9100, our toll-free number if you'd like to ask a question about the governor's speech today or education priorities in the state, or email us, theexchange@iowapublicradio.org. Ken in Iowa City is joining us. Hi, Ken. Good afternoon.
Hey, how you doing?
Great. Good to have you with us. What do you got on your mind?
I was just commenting on the surcharge for students, the $100. And what I was commenting on was that, you know, how it doesn't seem like that big of a charge increase, but for all the department cuts and everything, the quality of education, like your number of labs or your number of TAs has been decreased. It just kind of
Are you
kind of a negative way to look at that? When
are you
$100? Yes, I am.
I'm sorry, Kent. You're a student. So if I'm getting the gist of your question, you're saying a surcharge at the same time that you're getting sort of a reduced education because you have fewer TAs, less support there as a student. Did I get the gist of that right?
Yep, that's it.
Okay. President Miles, react to that concern from Ken, a student from Iowa City.
I think he's hit it right on the head. It's a very unfortunate occurrence that we have both of those things happening at the same time. But the fact is, it would be even worse if we were not asking students to make a financial contribution to this as well. And again, it's $6 million out of $165. We're having to find all of the rest of the money elsewhere. But the fact is that one can only do more with less up to a certain point, and that's been happening in the Regents institutions for way too many years. And now it's having an impact on the quality of the education that we can provide.
Okay, Ken, thank you very much. If you're still there, Ken, was there any thought of having to leave the University of Iowa, I assume, since you're calling from Iowa City because of the surcharge? Is it getting very tight with you?
It's not necessarily like, you know, I understand that it's not that big of a difference to make. It's kind of like paying for that, you know, you got a dollar charge for extra sour cream, you know, like at a restaurant, kind of a...
All right.
It's not like a real negative, but just, you know, you notice it and like... You notice it just in the classes are different.
Ken, thank you very much for calling from Iowa City, 1-866-780-9100. Mike writes us an email. It's sort of in the same vein. In the light of the budget cuts, he writes, the universities are suffering greatly. What does the legislature intend to do in order to ensure the continuation of viable and affordable universities in Iowa? He'd like some insights from President Miles.
Oh, I'm sure Chris knows exactly what the legislature is going to do, so we can let him answer that. Unfortunately, I don't.
What would you what would you like them to do in terms of continuing affordable education at Iowa's higher education?
Well, I think there are a couple of things that are important. One is to recognize that when we abruptly reduce funding, which is a risk if nothing is done to restore the $80 million in federal funding, that has a damaging effect. So we want whatever the state can reasonably provide in funding overall, but at least let's try to adjust if we need to in a more slow fashion. The second is Iowa has an enviable record in terms of higher education support in many respects, but not so much in the area of providing need-based aid for our students who need the greatest financial assistance. And we need more help in the public universities there as well.
Let me pivot back to Chris Byrne, president of Iowa State Education Association. The governor says his budget request will include $60 million for the last installment of the Early Education Initiative, but it's, as we know, a tough budget year. How likely are you to get that $60 million?
You know, who knows? That's a very good question. You know, I don't think any of us are going to know until March comes around and the revenue estimating conference comes back and tells us how things are going. You know, we're hoping that things are turning around with the economy. And until we see those figures, I don't think anybody knows what's going to really happen with the budget.
Let me ask another sort of way to both of you, actually, starting with Chris Byrne. What other things didn't we hear about today in the governor's speech that you would like to see as legislative priorities for K-12, Chris Byrne?
You know, I heard three things that I'm very was thrilled about. You know, he talked about the race to the top and trying to make sure that we get that grant, fully funding allowable growth at 2%, and the $100 million to help backfill, some of the budget cuts that have happened over the past year. Beyond that, I'm not sure that K-12 can ask for anything more.
Okay, let's go to you, President Miles. Priorities that you see in the legislature, if you had your druthers?
I believe that Governor Culver set the right priorities and the right tone for this state. We do need to look forward, not backward. We need to be thinking about jobs. We need to continue to invest in education overall, which he was very clearly strong about. And I just look forward now to rolling up our sleeves and sorting through the details, because there's a lot in this budget that, of course, we don't know yet, because the budget won't be released until the end of the month.
David Miles, we have just over a minute left. Can we get an update from you about the rebuilding efforts at the University of Iowa in light of 2008 floods? How are we doing there? Is more funding needed?
I believe that we have the funding under control at this point, and that's through some terrific efforts, first of all, on the part of this governor and this legislature to provide $100 million bonding authority. We were able to leverage $750 million of federal money through that. The University of Iowa has contributed funding, as have donors to the university as well. So I believe the funding is well in hand. Now it will be a long challenging process, I'm sure, to actually make decisions, first of all, which we anticipate doing as early as February, as our February meeting. But then, unfortunately, it will take years to rebuild from the devastating floods of 2008. As you know, we have important decisions to make about the Hancher-Voxman-Clapp Performing Arts Center, as well as School of Music, and we're going to hear from the university at the February meeting about those.
So those structures, the placement, location of those, that's still all up in the air.
It is, but we should be addressing it shortly.
Okay, thank you very much for joining us this half hour. Board of Regents President David Miles and Chris Byrne, President of the Iowa State Education Association. Gentlemen, thank you for taking the time to come in and join us this half hour.
Thank you.
Thanks, Ben.
The Exchange is produced by Catherine Perkins, and Jeff Schmidt, our producer assistant today, was Christina Sarnelli. Technical support from Dennis Reese and Julie Englander. Podcasting available by going to iowapublicradio.org. We always welcome your comments and questions about this program. Contact us anytime, theexchange@iowapublicradio.org. Our theme music was composed and performed by Dan Knight. The Exchange is a production of Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. Thanks for joining us.